For over 10 years, VOC Nation has taken listeners behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Our hosts are not only experts on the business, but have lived in the business. Subscribe and hear weekly podcasts from hosts like legendary pro wrestling journalist Bill Apter, former Impact Wrestling star Wes Briscoe, former WWE and AWA broadcaster Ken Resnick, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, former WCW star The Maestro, NWA legend The Raging Bull Manny Fernandez, and much more. VOC Nation programming is free on most major podcasting apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Radio.com. And video podcast and bonus content is available on Patreon for as low as $3 a month. What are you waiting for? Head to VOCNation.com and dig into the most comprehensive podcast network built for pro wrestling fans. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at VOC Nation Wrestling Network and follow us on Twitter at VOC Nation. No BS with the Bull, Manny Fernandez, right here in the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. The voice of choice, Bruce Wirt, back again one more time with the Raging Bull, the legend, Manny Fernandez. What's happening, Manny?
Oh, not much. Typical Monday, you know, getting ready for another big dental appointment tomorrow.
Yeah. It hurts. Yeah. It hurts me just to hear you say that.
It's pretty good for me right now.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the dentist. And that's not any one dentist. I just, you know, I have a big trust problem with some specialists, Manny, because sometimes specialists do work that they don't have to. I once went to an eye doctor that prescribed me glasses. And I have 20/20 vision. And I got a second opinion because I was getting the worst headaches of my life. And the second opinion said, you don't need glasses. You have 20/20 vision. And there you go. They just wanted to sell me a $700 pair of glasses.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. There's crooks in all walks of life, in every profession. Not just wrestling, but in every profession. You're going to find some shady people always trying to get over on the person. Always.
Amen. So today, We've been promising for a few weeks that we would get into some, you all are wonderful at sending us your feedback, your mail, and responding on Twitter and sending us messages on Twitter. So I'm going to read some of what we have. We have a couple of hundred messages that have come through over the 12 or 13 weeks that we've done this together, and you know, a lot of stuff about the military. So I think we've covered that a lot in other episodes. So I encourage everybody to go back on the Memorial Day episode. We covered Manny's military service in depth, including, you know, some papers that he sent over to me personally. So anybody that doubts him there can go back and listen to that. And if you don't believe him and you don't believe me, then we don't care about you. But for everybody else, I think there's a lot to talk about today. But before we get into the mail, Manny, I just wanted, you and I had talked offline. There's a few things that we wanted to touch on. And one, you know, you've been pretty outspoken that you don't watch today's pro wrestling, but you found yourself stumbling through the channels and you caught an episode of AEW, right?
Right, right. I was bored with what was on TV, the basketball, baseball. You know, I like the Yankees, but I can't sit through a 9-inning game, you know, balls and strikes and all that. But, you know, there wasn't much on TV, no good movies, nothing. You know, it was all garbage. So I'm flipping through the channel surfing, and I seen this two guys in the ring, Jungle Boy and Kenny Omega, and they're cutting a promo. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, Jungle Boy gets offended from something, and he lays 20 damn elbows upside of Kenny Omega's head. Elbow. I'm talking about elbow strikes. And yeah. All Kenny Omega does is lean against the rope, then he rakes the guy's eyes. And I'm going, oh, my God, how phony can these guys be? You know, and I was just watching the day before that. I was just watching the highlights of the UFC fight. And you see the UFC fighters, and they get up against that cage. They start throwing elbow strikes. And you see a guy get cut, dazed and confused, or knocked out. And this clown's throwing 20 damn elbows, and the guy ain't even going down. Then he raked the guy's eyes. How phony can these guys get? I mean, Jesus, no wonder people don't watch that crap anymore. You know, you have UFC legitimate, and they throw elbow strikes and knock the guy out. and you got some media throwing 20 albums inside a guy's hand, and the guy just doesn't even register. And worst of all, he breaks his eyes. No, that's one thing I always hated. Somebody raking eyes. I could never stand that.
Wasn't that a Hulk Hogan? Hulk, as a face, Hulk Hogan used to rake the eyes or rake the back. That was like a trademark Hogan move, right?
Really? I don't know. I never watched Clown. It's probably no doubt because he didn't have much of a repertoire. Look out, I used a big word. A repertoire. But, I mean, it was ridiculous. I just hit my head. It stuck in my head. I said, how could somebody try to convince people to buy a ticket to see this crap when they can watch highlights of UFC and see those guys really lay it in and guys get busted open, blood everywhere, and these clowns just stand there, lean on a rope, and raking eyes. Oh, my God.
35 years ago, 20 elbows to the side of the head might have had somebody out getting stretchered out to the hospital. I mean, that was the day of headbutts as a finishing move. So, it's crazy. And you could do, I know fans like fast paced action. I'm not a fan of the current product. I'm very outspoken about that. And that's why I like doing these shows. But you could have fast paced action with lots of high flying moves, but not be over the top silly, and no selling things like that, especially when UFC is on another channel. And you see how devastating an elbow strike to the head really is.
Yes, that's the comparison. That's what made me think. No wonder only 800,000 people watch this crap. It must be desperate to find some kind of viewing.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing, Manny, that you and I chatted about, last week's show, we talked a lot about your time in Florida. And again, you can go back and listen to that. If it's your first time listening to this show, all of Manny's shows, No BS with the Bull, are on the VOC Nation Wrestling Network podcast feed, totally free on your favorite podcast app. Wherever you like to listen to podcasts, give us a like or a subscribe. It's free. And check us out or go to vocnation.com. You can find everything there. But last week we talked about Florida, and you said to me after the show, in between the week before we came back together, you said you missed talking about your time with Andre the Giant, which is significant.
Yeah, very significant, because I met Andre when I was a junior in college at West Texas State, and we became real close friends because I was his driver. I'd pick him up at the airport, take him to Lubbock, take him to Hartford, take him to Odessa. Checking all the shows that he had to go be at, and we had a lot of fun together. I really got close to knowing him, enjoyed drinking with him and just playing cards with him, playing cribbage with him and stuff. He was so good at cribbage, and I always lost to him. I always lost $5-$10 all the time. But he was a great man. He's part of my life. And one of the biggest remembrances of my Florida career was having Andre rush in to save me when Morocco and Ladd and Humperdinck's gang jumped me and blooded me up, and Andre came to the rescue, then having a couple of tag team matches with them. It was a big boost to my career to have Andre in my corner, he was so much fun. He was so great in the ring. For as big a man as he was so much fun in the ring. Great. And it was hard to keep a straight face because he was always laughing or joking about something, in the ring. On the apron. So, yeah, I was sorry that I forgot about that because he was a big part of my career coming up, especially when I was green. He had so much great advice.
Did you ever see somebody get on the wrong side of Andre in the ring?
No. That's what, the only side I've ever seen of Andre was the good side, the funny side, especially when he's playing cribbage with everybody, with Murdoch and Morgan and all the guys that played cribbage in the dressing room. But I've never seen anybody get on the bad side of him. I know he wasn't much high on Hulk Hogan, but I wasn't around for that. I just heard, secondhand talk or whatever you want to call it, scuttlebutt. But no, I never seen that. Everybody had so much high regard for him and respect because he carried himself like a real person, like a real man. He was respectful to everybody.
Did you ever participate in one of those legendary drinking sessions after the matches with Andre? I heard he could put away alcohol like nobody else.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, my apartment in Amarillo, Texas, when him and Blackjack got into that physical confrontation. I wouldn't say I participated. I say I was laying on the floor.
So you got to tell us more about that. So in your apartment, Blackjack Mulligan and Andre the Giant had a physical conversation. I can't imagine furniture surviving that confrontation.
No, by the time that physical confrontation was over, we had to pay $2,500 for the damage. This is back in 77, so $2,500 worth of damage would be a lot of money today. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got playing cribbage, drinking, getting drunk. I was so drunk by then, I was just laying on the damn floor. And all I remember is, we fight now, boss. And boom, boom, boom. And oh, my God. It was a mess. And they were laughing the whole damn time. They were so damn drunk.
Was it true? I mean, a lot of us, you know, I'm 40. So I saw the end of Andre the Giant. You know, I've seen tapes, but, you know, we saw the slow, you know, immobile Andre that it's almost sad what he became at the end. Still very intimidating. But Andre at his height, when he went height, no pun intended, but Andre at his peak, again, no pun intended, when he could move around, could he have taken anybody that he wanted to at any time?
In a second.
Yeah.
In a second. It would take no time at all. In a second. Andre was so agile. You know, he used to go stop rope and stuff, you know. Andre, when I met Andre, and I was, like I said, still in college, West Texas State, Andre was mobile. He was mobile for a big man. I used to say, how's this big guy going to get around in that ring? Well, I'll tell you what, with Mulligan, him went out, he went over the top rope, running on the floor, come up. You know, he was moving. And I used to be amazed that he could move. But I know later on in life, he got that giantitis disease, and it really slowed him down, you know, slowed him down a lot. But when I was young and Andre was in the business, he could go. You could say, well, I truly could say he could go. There was no quitting Andre.
Yeah. One of the greatest of all time, Andre the Giant. And, you know, there was a lot of good by our documentaries about Andre the Giant out there. So, you know, any modern fans that don't have any concept of Andre the Giant and how giants worked back in the day, go out and look at that, because it's a lot different than, I mean, you look at somebody like the Big Show, Manny, who was big, right? Not quite as big, yep, as Andre, but they worked him much differently. Like, he wasn't a dominating force like Andre was. They had him in a lot of silly stuff. And I think they could have, if the Big Show was around back in the 70s, he was, it's a much different story, right?
Right. It would have been way different.
Yeah.
See, what I like about Andre is, like I said, he could take arm drag, hip toss, you know, go over the top rope, go through the rope. I didn't see all that stuff. I didn't see Big Show do much of. Big Show's a good guy. He was very talented. But the role they had him in was, you know, they kind of shortened his span of pro wrestling, really, you know.
Comedy. Yeah, a lot of comedy.
Yeah, it kind of got stale after a while. I think they burned him out.
Yeah, but at his height, at the end of WCW, I mean, he was a monster. But, you know, he went to that machine in WWE. Probably made a lot of money, a lot more money than some others. But in terms of the wrestling side of it, I've always felt like he could have been so much more. He could have just been a dominant monster. They could have taken him off TV for months at a time, brought him back, almost like what they do with Lesnar, you know?
Yep. You know, Big Show would have done that. But, you know, Vince has a funny way of doing things. That's the only thing I can say about Vince. But getting to that point, you know, you had asked me about a week ago about these guys that all got released, you know, that Brahman or whatever his name is.
Braun Strowman, yeah.
Braun Strowman, all these guys that are talented. After I was getting back to what I said about AEW, after I watched that AEW clip that I watched, 30 seconds or whatever of it, I thought to myself, deeply thought to myself, Vince is being smart. He's not releasing talent. He's making cap space like the NFL.
Yeah.
He's saving money. He's saving money. He's just getting rid of the high dollar guys. That way you save money under the cap. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, listen, every business has a budget, and yep, they're in a rebuilding phase, and they want to get back out on the road and start producing shows again. And I think they want to really look at who they're going out on the road with. And I mean, maybe Braun Strowman, sometimes you get too big for your britches, you know? I mean, Braun had a big ego, apparently. I don't know that firsthand, but I've heard that secondhand. And maybe Braun, Vince wanted to give him a reality check. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know. It could, like I said, it could be recent for cap space, money spaces. They're going out on the road to promote more shows, live shows and stuff. That costs money. That all costs money. All the production equipment, all the trucks driving, everything that Vince has got costs a ton of money to set up, you know. So,
absolutely. All right, Manny, we got a ton of listener feedback, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side and listen to your questions, or listen to Manny answer your questions, your comments. And by the way, you can get those into us at VOC Nation on Twitter. And we thank you. Twitter followers are up again this week. We're at 26,600 from 26,200. So we thank you to all of you that continue to follow us on Twitter, or email Bruce at VOCNation.com. And that will send me an email, and I'll get all of your questions. And you can do that if you listen to any one of our shows. So we'll be back in just a second after you listen to some of the sponsors that support this and other VOC Nation programming. VOC Nation takes wrestling fans behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Get stories and inside information from people who worked on the other side of the curtain. Follow the VOC Nation Wrestling Network podcast feed and get weekly shows from hosts like Bill After, The Raging Bull Manny Fernandez, Ken Resnick, The Maestro, Shelly Martinez, Wes Briscoe, and more. Visit VOCNation.com for more information and follow us on Twitter at VOCNation.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
No BS with the Bull, Manny Fernandez, the voice of choice, Bruce Wirt, self-proclaimed. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Every week, I think this is our 13th or 14th episode. You can go back and listen to all of them by subscribing, following, liking the VOC Nation Wrestling Network on your favorite podcast app. You get all of our shows, including Wrestling with History, which I do with Bill Apter and Ken Resnick in the room with Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and WCW, former WCW star, the Maestro. Got Wes Briscoe, Briscoe and Big Ace. A lot of shows. And our newest member of the team is Brian Ferguson with Bumps and Thumps. We got an interview, Manny, that went up over the weekend with former Olympian Ken Patera. And before I get to the questions, you got any good Ken Patera stories?
Oh, God, I love Ken. He's a great guy. We had a great match in Houston, Texas. You know, we just, Ken's a great guy. The only story I got is, you know, the one that got him and Mr. Saito up in Minneapolis in trouble with the cops, got Saito sentenced to jail for a while because Ken started to do a rock through the McDonald's window. You know, I got that story from some of the boys, but that's what I understand.
And, yeah. As I hear it, they had just closed McDonald's, right? And Ken and Saito were finishing a show and they were hungry. And the guy inside the restaurant was just a real jerk. Like, instead of, they were willing to pay. I mean, they would have paid extra. They just wanted to get a burger. You know that they have food that they're going to waste at the end of the night. And this guy wasn't letting them in. And Ken got mad and threw a rock. And what a shame to spend, you know, time in prison for something silly, you know. I guess he did beat up the police in the hotel room. That's not silly.
That was Saito.
That was Saito that did. Oh man.
Ken surrendered. They busted into Saito's room trying to get him, and he beat up. He broke that their back, and the lady got tore her back up, and that was Masa Saito that did all that.
Were you where were you at that time? Were you down south when that happened?
WCW.
Was that the talk of the town?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was talking because everybody knew how tough Masa Saito was. If you've been to Japan, he's one of the toughest guys they ever had on the roster. They knew how tough he was. And they said, and everybody's like, it's no surprise. You know, Masa, you try to break down his door, you better come with 20, not 3.
Yeah, exactly. Well, check it out. If you're listening and you haven't heard that yet, it's part one of two, Bumps and Thumps with Brian Ferguson, with the great Ken Patera. And I'm sure they cover that and much more. Manny, let's get to the questions. And number one on the list, Sam in Arkansas via email asks, any good stories on Magnum TA? And you worked with Magnum in NWA, WCW, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, Magnum, I met Magnum in San Antonio, Texas, when he went up to, I think it was California, to train with Buzz Sawyer. Paid Buzz Sawyer $20,000 to train him. And Buzz Sawyer, all he did was get high and doped up and didn't train him worth a damn, didn't do anything for Magnum. Basically, just took his money.
Thanks.
And then he found his way to San Antonio, and I got in there, and Joe Blanchard wanted me to work with him. And we got in there, me and Al Perez was my tactic partner, and Al Perez, and he was green too, so he wanted to learn. So we went in there, and it was me, Al Perez, and Magnum, and we all got training together. And then, you know, basically they used Magnum a little here, a little there. He was in a match supposed to wrestle Nick Bockwinkel on TV in San Antonio, and I snuck in, told Magnum to go to the dressing room, and when Bockwinkel turned around, it was me in the ring. He's kind of stuck, but had a great match with Bockwinkel. But I told him that, you know, this might not be the territory for him, that, you know, he might want to call Dusty Rhodes up in Florida. It'd probably be that with his looks, he'd probably get over like $1 million. And basically that's what he did, and he ended up in Florida, you know. And then we, you know, after Dusty got released there and took the book in Carolina, he brought us in together. And it was a good relationship, you know.
You know, Manny, what if Magnum didn't get injured in that accident, could Magnum, you think Magnum could have gone either and been the big, big star in Mid-Atlantic and ran with Flair for years, or gone north and made a bunch of money with McMahon?
I think Magnum would have got over anyway because of his looks and the way, you know, Magnum TA, and then you have Magnum PI. Yep. And, you know, they kind of look, you know, the look with the mustache and all that good shit. And that series, the Magnum PI series, is over like $1 million on TV.
Yep.
Everybody loved that. I didn't, but everybody else did. But, so I think with that, and just having the Magnum TA thing and the lookalike thing, I think he would have got over there. And he did get over in Florida and Louisiana and Carolinas, and he wouldn't have had that wreck. Messing with somebody else's wife, he probably would have got over anywhere.
Tell, and maybe I just missed it, but I've never heard that story. That wreck was as a result of him. Was speeding, but he was messing around with somebody's significant other.
Probably was the rumor I heard. The person I heard it from, I don't think would lie to me. So, you know, call it cool.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. You said probably was, and I don't want to get you in any hot water. But Magnum TA, you know, done in the business, essentially.
I'm just saying, you know.
Is that the kind of guy that Magnum was? He was, obviously he was good with the ladies, but was he the type of guy that would go and mess around with other people's spouses or significant others?
Yeah, well, this was just the one incident I knew about. I never heard about anything else. It was just one incident, but, you know, that's the one I heard about. And, you know, that's the only thing but after that, he was, you know, crippled up.
Yeah.
So, you know, it took a long time to rehab and get back to walk and stuff. They never thought he was going to get walk again, but he proved them wrong. But he's a strong-willed guy, but, you know, like I said, nobody used to talk about karma back then, but like I said, I figured maybe that was karma.
Yeah. And done in the business at the age of 27, I think. He was born in 59 and that happened in 86. What a shame. A lot more years that were left on the tank. But, you know, Manny, when God calls your card and says that you're going to do something else, it's all up to him, right?
Yeah. And, you know, here's another little beef I had with him. Magnum was going through physical therapy, trying to get everything. I used to come visit him all the time. I used to come visit him when he did the swimming pool therapy. I'd go there to the pool and encourage him and stuff like that. Because I remember him as a kid coming to San Antonio asking for advice and wanting to train. And I'd go to physical therapy like that. But later on, when he got to walking and getting back on TV with WCW, he gave all the credit to Dusty Rhodes, which kind of pissed me off, you know. I said, oh, okay. That's true, you know. And to this day, you know, we still look at each other. I mean, I'm cordial, you know. And like he told his kid one time, we were doing a greet and meet in New Jersey. He told his kid, "Well, there's Manny Fernandez. He's the one who taught me how to drop kick." I said, "Yeah, just taught you how to drop kick, right, dude?" You know. So you know, there's always a little bit of animosity there. Go out of your way to help somebody that's been in a very serious car wreck. Try and be there to cheer him up and keep his will, keep him going, you know, give him encouragement. And then when he gets out, gets around Dusty Rhodes again, which that was his boy. That was his boy because he was up his ass half the time. You know, he gives all the credit due to Dusty.
You see Dusty in his ear saying, "Oh, come on, Pumpkin, give me some of that glory. Manny doesn't need glory."
It's funny thing that you brought that up because I was thinking about that when I saw that somebody sent me a WCW promo, the fur coat promo, and it's him and Dusty in two big old massive fur coats talking to Tony Schiavone.
Yeah.
You know, I just broke up laughing because it just brought back that picture of Joe Namath sitting on the bed. The New York Jets bench with that big fur coat in the winter sitting on the bench. That's how far back I can remember Joe Namath playing football.
Since you mentioned Tony Schiavone, I'm going to skip down a little bit and go to another one. Dan from Pennsylvania via email says, who was Manny's favorite announcer in terms of getting the boys over without making it all about themselves? I don't like the announcers of today, especially Pat McAfee or McAfee. That was Dan saying that, not me. Pat McAfee had an altercation, Manny, with Bill Apter a few days ago. Bill wrote something negative about Pat after SmackDown, and Pat told Bill to F off and create a little stir, you know, telling a legend like Bill Apter to F off. Not a great move by Pat McAfee.
Well, number one, think about this. If you got to tell somebody that's so graceful of a gentleman, so unalarming, such a great person, to F off, how sorry are you? How sorry could you be? Come on, man. Bill Apter's been around since dirt was invented. You know what I'm saying? And he's done nothing but glorify this business, even though it doesn't deserve it anymore. He's done nothing but stuck up for the business, protected the business, and protected everybody in the business.
Yep.
And, you know, he's done a great job for this business. And for some mouthpiece just to tell him to do that, if I was Bill Apter, which I know Bill Apter never do, I'd have slapped the hell out of him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. The
greatest announcer, I'll tell you the truth, to this day. To this day, I always praise him and cherish what he taught me when I was young and green and sat with next to him, and he would kick me under the damn booth to tell me to slow down or something like that. You know, to think about your words. Gordon Solie. He had so much charisma, he didn't have to be about him. It just came out of him. And he brought the best out of you and your promo. You know, he didn't try to interrupt the promo or take the center stage. He was just there to help you along. And that's what I'll always remember about him. Gordon Solie was awesome to me.
Gordon was a legendary drinker, right? Speaking of Andre the Giant and drinking, Gordon could put him down like anybody, couldn't he?
Oh, God, yeah. Remember I told you the story when I first met him? I went up and shook his hand and smelled like 100 proof already at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, boy. All right, let me skip down. Since we just talked about Bill Apter, Oliver something or other, it's a lot of letters strung together on Twitter. Manny told a story once about Bill Apter's dad. Can he go into detail on that again? I love listening to Apter and Resnick on VOC Nation, and that's a story we don't know too much about. Oliver.
Yeah, Bill Apter's dad was a timekeeper in West Palm Beach, Florida. And he would sit there on the timekeeper's table, and he would watch all the young guys. He'd been around so long, he'd watch all the young guys. You know, when he gave him that job, he'd watch all the young guys wrestle and stuff. And, he'd been around so long, he'd give you advice because he knew what he was talking about.
Right.
I guess that's why Bill Apter got into Pro Wrestling Illustrated, started his own little magazine. But his dad was so helpful to young guys, and he took a liking to me. And after every match, he always would tell me, good job, kid. You know, you should try this. And he was just a great inspiration as a fan of the business, the way the business was worked back then, as old school, you know. And he would always give you good compliments and tell you, well, you overdid this a little bit. And, you know, he was just there. And he was there at the ringside so he could see everything you were doing. And he could commentate on that, you know. I mean, talk to you about it after your match. So, yeah, I mean, Bill Apter's dad, I was always so glad we get Paul West Palm Beach Florida on Mondays because I got to see Bill Apter's dad. And we'd sit down and talk, and he'd give me advice, and I would take it to heart. And that's how he became close. And then he told me about Bill, and me and Bill came down one time when he did the article introducing Manny Fernandez to Paul West Palm Beach Florida. And I just enjoyed Bill and his dad, and they'll always have a place in my heart, especially his dad.
That's awesome.
I can tell you that, right? You know, his dad might not have never been a wrestler, but he knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, that's great. And a lot of people probably don't know that about Bill Apter, his dad being part of the business. Small part of the business,
yes,
but part of the business. So, Manny, one other thing I want to mention. You mentioned Gordon Solie making it about the talent, not about him. Yeah, I work a lot with Ken Resnick, who Ken was in the AWA and WWF in the mid-'80s. And I've heard a lot of the feedback on Ken was that Ken was the same way. You know, he didn't have the glamour and the glitter or whatever, glitz and glamour of a Gene Okerlund, but Gene was about putting himself over as much as he was the talent. And talent liked working with Ken because they knew that Ken wasn't going into business for himself. Was that important for you as a performer to work with an announcer that was for you and not just not for them? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it was like Tony Schiavone was the same way too. I love Tony Schiavone too. I mean, he's one of the top, I'd say top three. Ken Reznick was good at AWA, and he wasn't about himself. He was about getting the promo over with the guys. It wasn't about him trying to promote himself as a product like some of these guys did, Orkland and them, Jim Ross, you know. But Jim Ross was great too. He was a great commentator. But, you know, Ken Reznick was good in the AWA. I always liked him. But he's in the top three. You know, I would say, you know, about promoting the business, not promoting themselves.
Did you ever work in Minnesota for Vern? Did you ever go up there?
Yeah. I worked the AWA territory with Wahoo McDaniels and Ray Stevens with the booker. I had fun there. I had the, you know, that's when they had the Beverly Boys, Mike Enos and Wayne Bloom. They were there as the construction crew.
And, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Diamond. That's when Diamond Dallas Page was just the manager. Then I got back from Japan, and all of a sudden this guy was a champ. I started laughing and go, oh my God, the Donut Boy's champ now. The guy that used to go for donuts and coffee is the champion. What the hell is going on in this business?
Yeah, he managed Pat Tanaka and who was
Paul
it?
Diamond.
Bill, yeah.
Paul Diamond. Diamond.
Diamond Station Incorporated, right? That was their name?
Yep. Yeah, Diamond Exchange is what it started as, and then went to something else.
Yep. Yeah, and but Mike Enos and Wayne Bloom were there. Yeah, that the Trooper who went on to become the Patriot, Del Wilkes, right? Yep, he was up there at that time.
Yep, I knew Del. Yeah, we had fun with Del. Yeah, awesome. It was a good – Wahoo and Ray Stevens had a great crew, and we were doing really good with AWA, getting it back on its feet. The old Greg Gagne came back in the picture. Oh, my God. He just destroyed everything again. Everything that Ray Stevens and Wahoo McDaniels built, but Greg Gagne destroyed. And of course, eventually, they shut down the territory, as you know.
Here's an email from Ron in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It ties together. It says, does Manny have any heat with Eric Bischoff? And maybe I'll add to that question. Was Eric in the AWA when you were up there? So any heat with Eric? And was he around in AWA when you ran there?
How can I have heat with somebody you don't even really consider anything?
Yeah, you know, fans just think that everybody just walks around hating each other, or, you know, I think that's what fans think. But no offense to Ron. We appreciate the question, Ron. But
yeah, no, I appreciate Ron's question, but he had no significant, sorry, my teeth, you know, I had no significant influence in anything I did.
Or he was an announcer, right?
Yeah, he was just an announcer when I was at AWA. He was nothing outside of that. But as far as knowing him as a person, I never cared to know him and didn't really get involved with him as anything. And yeah, like anything, like I said, when I came back, Diamond Dallas Page was the champion, and I used to see him as a donut boy. And then all of a sudden, Eric Bischoff is the big booker, and I'm going like, this is getting bad. Wrestling's getting bad, but I'm glad I'm staying in Japan. That's when I was signed to Japan. Everything in the States is kind of getting screwy. You know, you got a commentator, an announcer, all of a sudden he's a booker, and then you got a guy that used to manage people and run the donuts, and he's the champion.
So did you work? Did you do anything in the later day WCW when Bischoff ran it?
No.
No.
I didn't go back to WCW. I walked out on WCW.
Right.
Which I probably never should have done that to Jim Crockett and Dusty Rhodes. But, you know, me and Dusty had a love-hate relationship. And I just got tired of the BS and I walked out. But, you know, any question is a legitimate question, but I had no involvement with Eric Bischoff to even waste my time to say anything much about him. There's not much to say in my book.
Got it. All right. Sunshine Babisha, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Babisha, on Twitter. Would Manny agree to work as a coach for AEW if they asked him?
No, not me. Those guys are dead set in their ways of being, you know, wrestling ain't my life. I don't need wrestling in my life. And I appreciate the question, but, you know, I did wrestling because I really had nothing else to do. It would have gave me a good living, make a good living. I couldn't hold a 9-to-5 job. I already knew that. You know, I knew that was going to be hard. I couldn't use my degree to be a cop because I probably would have been in prison killing some idiot for being stupid. You know, but no, you know, I really don't see it that way. It's like I look at these hangers-on, the guys that did their 40 years and still hanging on trying to, you know, make a living out of wrestling, and I feel bad for them. You know, they can't let go.
Right.
You know, plus these guys, they have no concept of telling a story or psychology. Like we talked about earlier, a guy throws 20 elbows to the side of somebody's head, and the guy's still standing there leaning on a rope and raking his eyes. Come on, man.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's ridiculous. But,
let's go. Jack from New York City via email. Did Manny know Wes Briscoe when he was a small child? Did he think that Wes would become a wrestler someday? And obviously, Wes does a show, Briscoe and Big Ace, here on VOC Nation. You worked with Jerry Briscoe in the late 70s, I guess right before Wes was born. Did you ever know Wes as a child, or did you remember when Jerry had Wes?
No, no. I was gone by the time Jerry had Wes. Wes wasn't around when I was with Jerry and Jack. But anybody, I always said it, when they had decided to have a kid, if that was a boy, he's going to be tough as nails. Because he was tough as nails. That's it. And knowing Jack and Jerry Briscoe the way I knew them and the way they loved amateur wrestling, I knew their kid would be dynamite. You know, he'd be dynamite on two legs. Because he'd have to be tough with his dad beating him up on him every day. You know, but I met Wes several times and had great conversations with him. Apparently his dad has told him about me. So he knew a lot about me, and I appreciated that. But Wes was a tough kid, a really, really respected kid, was brought up right in the business, and you know, he's doing a great job.
Did you ever work with Wes in the ring on the indie scene?
No, we've been on shows together, and Wes always asked somebody else, and he always put me with some other people.
Got it. All right. Well, thank you for the question. What was that? That wasn't Sunshine. That was Jack in New York City. Thank you, Jack. Anonymous. I won't read the email address, but it says, who is Manny's best student today and in years past? I guess they're asking, who's your best student or mentee today, and who was it in years past? Maybe Anonymous is one of your current students, and they're trying to get you to give some.
You know, I don't ever favor my students because they're all pretty well. As everybody knows, the names I've read out: J.B. Allen, Booker T, Stevie Ray, R-Truth, you know, Homicide, Low-Key, and all the people. I could never say I had a favorite. They all were trained the same way, and they all did good for themselves. They all, one way or another, made it in this business, and that's more than I can say. I mean, they're all great kids, and right now, I just have a group of kids, and I've never favored anybody. I'm tough on all of them,
sure.
Period. I don't take it easy on nobody. Either you're going to hang on and be tough like I teach you to be tough, or you're going to quit and walk out the door. And either way, it doesn't bother me. You know?
Does it upset you? Like a lot of the online profiles will list who trained who, and some of those people that you mentioned have you listed in there, R-Truth being one of them. Rob Van Dam famously gave you credit at the WWE Hall of Fame for your work with him. But like JBL, I haven't seen JBL acknowledge your work with him. Does that bother you at all, Manny, when somebody doesn't give you the credit that you deserve?
No. Why should it?
Well, yeah, you're not really wired like that.
No, I have no ego about wrestling again. You know, if they want to do it, they do it. If they don't, I don't force nobody to do nothing. That's on them. I mean, I trained them. They did their job, training hard and to get better. They did the great at it by their career. I mentored people like JBL when he came to me from Brad Rangan School. You know, if you put Brad Rangan, because he started with Brad Rangan.
Sure.
And if you put Brad Rangan, well, that's great, because Brad does deserve the credit because he started there. You know, I have no ego about that. If they want to say it, they're not obligated to that. They did their time. They paid their little bit of money. That, you know, obligation to that? No, not at all. No, there's no ego about wrestling in this guy.
And so is JBL somebody that you knew would go on to become as great as he did, you know, Hall of Famer?
Oh, yeah, definitely. When I first got him at Global Wrestling Federation, I could see potential. You could see potential in people. You could see that just by the way they carry themselves, how they get in the ring, they're willing to learn and listen. You're going to know these guys are going to go a long way just by listening. Just if they sit down and listen to somebody who knows and has knowledge about the business and passes it on to them, especially the psychology of the business, how to tell a story, and they listen real good, you know that guy is going to go a long way compared to somebody that says, well, yeah, I got it, yeah, I got it, I know what I'm doing. Those kind of guys, you know.
He really broke out when he mixed his actual personality with his talent. Instead of trying to copy, like, I think a lot of the early JBL was trying to recreate Stan Hansen or, you know, somebody in that ilk. And when he took the real over-the-top financial mogul gimmick and put that with the actual style that he worked in the ring, he became an instant superstar, right? I mean, that's the secret sauce, is to mix, kind of take your own personality and then turn up the dial so it's natural.
Right. That's what I did with mine. It's a bit crazier. But JBL... all I can say about JBL, like I said, he listened. He took everything in and observed, and he took every bit of what he took in and made it himself. He made it into his own character, you know. But earlier part of career, when I had him global and put him Bobby Duncan Jr., you know, they were Texas. You're in Texas. I made him Texas. I had Black Bart, Johnny Mantell, Cowboys, like Long Riders, the heels. And, of course, you bring in the baby Cowboys, you know, Duncan and JBL. So you give him the cowboy gimmick. You know, he looks good in the cowboy gimmick. Then it went on. That's basically where it's not their input. It's the booker's input and the people that want him to keep portraying that until they get enough stature under their career to where they can suggest something else. Like Scott Hall suggested doing Razor Ramon.
Yep.
That wasn't his idea. That was Scott Hall's idea. You know, say hello to the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, that thing. So,
and then he really kept that persona when he went back to the Scott Hall name, when he went to WCW, he really kept the attitude that Razor Ramon had. And I mean, ended up becoming the greatest of all time, challenges aside.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. We'll work in another commercial. We'll come back and we'll wrap it up. There's a couple more questions. No BS with the Bull worldwide in the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. VOC Nation takes wrestling fans behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Get stories and inside information from people who worked on the other side of the curtain. Follow the VOC Nation Wrestling Network podcast feed and get weekly shows from hosts like Bill After, The Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez, Ken Resnick, The Maestro, Shelly Martinez, Wes Briscoe, and more. Visit VOCNation.com for more information and follow us on Twitter at VOCNation. All right, no BS with the Bull of Manny Fernandez on the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. I'm the voice of choice, Bruce Wirt, but nobody cares about me. Manny, we got a ton of great questions for this week, and these have come in over the last several weeks. Keep sending them. Tweet them at VOC Nation or send them directly to me, Bruce@VOCNation.com. And we'll try to work these into more shows in the future. So what we do on some of the other shows I host, like on After and Resnick's show, I do questions and feedback in the first couple of minutes of each episode. So maybe we do something like that. I love these questions. They're great questions. And we've had a lot of great conversation that came out of them. Manny and I, during the break, we decided that next week we're going to talk a little bit more about referees and announcers. I think there's a lot that we can go into. And somebody gave a great question about one of the best announcers. And so we'll go more into that in the weeks to come. Manny, let's get back to the mail. Andre from Parts Unknown. I wonder where that is. Does Manny talk? What's that?
Orlando, Florida, probably. I know Andre Brown in Orlando down there.
Well, maybe Orlando, maybe he's considering Orlando Parts Unknown. Who knows? Does Manny talk to any of today's stars on the independent scene? I'm curious why he views all of them as disrespectful. There must be some that still represent the business in a positive light. Manny, I don't think you've said everybody's disrespectful. I think you've said that there are some that are disrespecting the business and the product disrespects the business, but you're not out there hating on all of the talent.
No. Andre, I hope that's my brother Andre Brown in Orlando, Florida, because that sounds like a question he would ask, because he's always asking questions about how I like this guy, that guy in the business. No, the ones that I get on my nerves are the ones that show up in the dressing room acting like they're King Kong and they're 120 pounds soaking wet with weights in their pockets. Those guys, those are disrespectful guys that open up a damn jug of whiskey in the dressing room, start drinking before they go out and wrestle. Those guys are idiots. I cannot stand. They have no respect, no dressing room etiquette. No, most of the guys are very respectful when I come into the dressing room, come up and introduce themselves to me and say, "Thank you, nice to meet you, Mr. Fernandez." And I always tell them, "Don't call me Mr. Call me Bull, asshole, or stupid, but not Mr. I appreciate it, you know." And they just laugh like you did. They laugh and giggle. So I thought I could tell a person's got a good personality. When I say that, they kind of laugh. You know, "Well, I'm not going to call you out." You know, that's the way I get them with that little question, that little shout out right there. But no, the ones that I talk about is the ones that are negative people to the dressing room. They come in there and they're acting like hot shots. Especially these backyard independent kind of shows where they all think they're superstars because they copy everything from AEW, WWE, and whatever organization that's on TV that they think they could copy it and be part of, which they'll never be. Well, those are the kind of people I cannot stand.
Sure. You know, speaking of the Mister thing, my wife and I were I say arguing, but we were debating this. She was saying that she wanted the kids' friends to call her Mrs. And I said, I don't really dig that. I don't want to be Mr. Wirt. I just want to be just call me by my name. Or you know, I'm not into that. I'm a very informal kind of person, you know?
Yeah, me too. It's like a God-given name, you know, that's the name your mother or parents gave you. And you call me Manny or Manuel, whatever, you know, I was in the military. So yeah, that sir stuff got old with me, but you didn't say sir too much where I was at, you know, station and country. So, you know, you don't want to give away who was an officer compared to an enlisted man. You know, you never want to do that. They'd be a first target on their head. But
I think it's fine. Somebody that wants to be respectful in their first greeting, yeah. But once you say, okay, you don't have to do that anymore, then fair enough. I mean, some people do want to be called that. That's not me, you know?
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah. You can be respectful without having to say, sir, anybody. Yeah. You just read by his name, thank him. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You know, stuff like that. But, you know, outside of that, yeah, but that's my main deal. You know, if you show respect in the dressing room, show like you got, you know, some kind of sense of respectability or dressing room etiquette for the people that came before you, like I did when I started the business. Like, showed up, went in the dressing room early, an hour early, sat down and shut my mouth until somebody came to talk to me. Then I'd say, okay, yeah, you know, whatever you want me to do.
Yep.
You know, I'm here, you know. That was it, you know. But these guys come in there thinking, oh, man, I'm a pro wrestler. Look at me. I'm a pro wrestler. Oh, I'm a pro wrestler. Yeah, right. You're a freaking clown doing it once a month. You're in a pro nothing. You know? That's right. My biggest disagreement is people that punch a clock 9 to 5, 5 days a week and wrestle once a month and call themselves professional. That's the joke.
Yeah. No, I listen, I've never done it, so I can't. I have respect for anybody that gets between the ropes, but for you that lived your life and really lived the business, then I can totally understand why you say that about some of the indie talents of today. Taker DePriu, I think that's how you say the name on Twitter. Did Manny ever work with The Undertaker at any point in his career? I don't know if he took the name Taker because he's a fan of The Undertaker or what, but did you, or he or she, I don't know if it's a man or a woman, did you work with The Undertaker when he was Mean Mark or at any point?
No. When he was Mean Mark or Undertaker, never had the pleasure. Would have loved to. Would have been an honor. He was a great guy. I would have loved to work with him. Would have loved to work with him. But no, I never had the pleasure.
No,
that's
Undertaker.
The bad part of my career. Some of these young guys that were coming up at that time, oh, I would have loved to work with him, especially Mark.
Yeah.
Holloway. You're a good guy.
One of the greatest of all time. Thanks for the question, Mr. Taker. Let's two more. Corrine Castelloa on Twitter. Of all the wrestlers Manny worked with, who had the nicest spouse? Who had the meanest? That's Corrine.
Nice what?
Spouse. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Who had the nicest and the meanest spouse?
You know,
stick out?
You know, that's a hard, hard question for me to answer because remember I told you a while back, I didn't live around the forest. I lived 40, 50 miles away from Charlotte and 40, 50 miles away from anybody in San Antonio. I never lived around the wrestling community, as we're saying. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, so I never really got to hang out. I didn't hang out with wrestlers. I had real people in my life. Right. I met guys in bars and were cool, that I knew who I was and didn't do, you know, go glorified or get all gloried over it or all excited over it and everything. They treated me as a person.
Right.
So I loved that, you know, where I could go somewhere, be a normal person, sit down, have a couple of beers, enjoy myself, have some wings or whatever, and you know, just enjoy my time with normal people. I once I got out of the arena, wrestling ended for me. It was over. My job was done. I was over. I went and found a place to hang out down the road, away from all the wrestlers used to go. And we did the Charlotte Coliseum. Everybody go to Binnigan, Wahoo Fair, you name it. The whole crew would go there. I'd go 30 miles down the road to a little place, and then I found a little hole in the wall that I found that nobody cared. Everybody just wanted to drink, have fun, and have a little conversation, and that was it. So I never really knew anybody's wives. I never got into that. Of course, my wife didn't know them very well either because I didn't bring them to the pro wrestling. It was my job. They had a job. I had a job.
That's it. All right. So thank you for the question, Corrine. And we'll wrap it up with Billy Panee. I think that's the way you say it. I'm not very good at this today. On Twitter, Manny's run with Rick Rude was great. Did Manny have any ill will towards Rude for going and cashing in with the WWF?
Why would I? I'm the one that told him to go. When he told me the situation, I said, bro, I told this story many times. I told him, I said, brother, we're in this business to make a little money to support our families and for our future and our retirement. Brother, they give you that kind of money. Get the hell out of here. Go. What are you going to do? I said, don't worry about me. I can take care of me. I can take care of me. I got plenty of things. I've already got another offer from Japan for extended week. I'm fine. Go do your thing. And hey, no, you will. I love Rick Rude. We were great together. And, you know, a lot of people don't think so, but I think we were great together. And the thing about that proves that is if you go back to the cards that we were in Rock and Roll Express with, we sold out everywhere. With that's the awesome. Underneath card, it wasn't that you know, we'd have the Dusty Rhodes or the Magnums and the Flares and the Tully Plant or the Four Horsemen. We just had Jimmy Valiant, Rock and Roll Express, Jimmy Valiant, Barbarian, Shotsky Wadley. You know, we had the B team, but we still sold out everywhere. So, you know, people could say what they want about the other tag teams, but when you look at the long run that we had, the run that we had, and the money we drew, there's no comparison.
Did you think that Rick Rude would ever have that gimmick that he had in the WWF? Did you see him dialing that up and going over the top the way he did?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I always knew that was his gimmick.
Yeah.
He was his ladies' man. Yeah. He was a ladies' man. He'd knock him out. They dropped dead from Rick Rude. I always knew that. That was a great gimmick for him.
Yeah, he left us way too early. I think he was only 40 or 41 years old when he passed away.
Yep.
Very sad, and just got back into the business, you know. He cashed in his Lloyd's of London policy. I think it was a neck injury, and he was really trying to, I guess if the guys that did that, if they could pay it back, they could start to wrestle again. And he was trying to do that, I think, in WCW. And yeah, left us way too soon for sure.
Yeah, he did, you know. And I kept up with him. He was doing so good and everything. I used to laugh when he used to do the girl thing in the ring. I used to laugh because I always knew that was him.
Yeah.
I always knew that was him. That fit him perfectly, you know. That's one thing Vince probably did right in the whole time that I've known about Vince, is give Rude that gimmick.
Well, think about, I mean, he really, Ultimate Warrior, probably owes his career to Rick Rude, because Rude, during that peak, Rude really put him over. Hogan put him over in the big match, but Rick Rude was the heel that Ultimate Warrior needed. And every good face needs a heel. Hogan wouldn't have been him without Bobby Heenan, AWA or WWF.
Yep.
And Rick Rude or Warrior wouldn't have been nearly as successful without Rick Rude.
Correct. After that, Ultimate Warrior still sucked.
There we go. And Fast and Furious, we're over an hour, actually. Great, great show. Please keep the comments and questions coming. Again, at VOC Nation on Twitter, Bruce at VOC Nation on email, and you can even do your comments on the website as well. We love hearing it. And we'll try to work it into more episodes. Manny, any big plans for the week besides getting your mouth destroyed?
No, that and I don't know if I told you, coming up on the June 26th of the show here in East Texas, they're going to give me some kind of lifetime achievement award. I don't know. My life's still going, so I guess when you get these awards, you die. I don't know for sure yet.
Don't die on us, Manny. We just became friends. I don't want to have to fly to Texas for a funeral. Come on.
Hey, don't be afraid to let these. There's another shout out to all the people with their great questions and stuff. And, you know, I love you all, and I hope you all have a prosperous, great life. But don't be afraid to get these idiots. You know, there's cowards born every day. That's a great motto of mine. Cowards are born every day. So what the coward do? Now that the internet and Facebook stuff, they become keyboard warriors. So if they want to ask stupid questions, go ahead. Let's answer their questions with legitimate answers. Their ignorance with legitimacy. That's the way you defeat stupid people, you know?
So maybe,
don't be afraid of that.
Manny just gave us permission. Maybe I'll read some of your stupid questions next time.
Yeah, there you go, brother.
Yeah, we'll do.
Don't have to be afraid. There's only two things guaranteed in this life, bro. That's death and taxes.
You know? Yeah.
So don't be afraid of people. I'm not. You know?
All right. So
words are words.
You hear it. If you sent a disrespectful, stupid question, there's a chance that Manny might dignify you with an answer next week. You'll have to stay tuned to find out. That'll wrap it up for this week. No BS with the Bull. Hopefully you like this enough to subscribe. Hit like, subscribe, follow on your favorite podcast app. It's absolutely free, and you get all of the rest of the VOC Nation programming on that feed. So thanks again for Manny Fernandez, the Raging Bull. I'm the voice of choice, Bruce Wirt. We'll see you next Monday right here on No BS with the Bull. Thanks, everybody. Have a good week.